You guys, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books was nominated for a Webby Award, which is this really prestigious award that I am dying to win. And there's a People's Voice component, and you can vote and get me from number two, second place, to first place. But you have to vote. Please go to vote.webbys.com. Vote.webbys.com, but it's kind of complicated, so it might be easier just to go to zibbyowens.com or my Instagram at zibbyowens, where it'll always be in my stories and it's in one of those little circle highlights. Please, please, please vote. Voting ends April 18th and I'm in second place, so please vote for best individual episode, talk show, interview show. Thank you so much.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Today's episode has been sponsored by Jay McLaughlin. Jay McLaughlin is a timeless lifestyle brand with incredible style and a spirit of connection. I am obsessed with Jay McLaughlin and have been so honored that they are sponsoring my Zibbyverse tour. It just so happens that the tour goes to so many communities and areas of the country that have Jay McLaughlin stores. And I love that the brand is philanthropic through Jay McLaughlin's local and loyal programming. Host store events to give back to organizations that are meaningful to Jay McLaughlin's local communities. I also love the fact that the clothes are just so chic. They make me feel polished and modern. And the best part is that most of the line comes in fabrics that don't wrinkle. I especially love the dresses, the cashmere sweaters, the other sweaters. You'll see them all over my Instagram. I typically tag at Jay McLaughlin. And so you can check it out. It is absolutely one of my favorite brands, and I am over the moon excited to be working with them. In fact, I want to share the love with all of you. Jay McLaughlin is giving 20% off new customers and listeners of my podcast with special code ZIBBY20. Capital ZIBBY 20. That's 20% off for new customers and listeners of the podcast with special code capital Z Zibby 20. Take advantage of it today. My favorites are this white, open, long cashmere sweater that I've been wearing on every flight that I've taken on this tour. I have a blue with light blue horizontal striped sweater, several dresses I even wore on Good Morning America. Check it out, Jay McLaughlin. Thanks so much. Hi, I'm Zibby Owens, the creator and host of the award-winning podcast that you're listening to right now. Thank you so much, called Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. It is a daily podcast, 365 days a year, and each day we talk to an author about all of the things related to their career, their book, their life, and more in 30 minutes or less, because who has time? I am now an author myself, although I wasn't when I started this podcast, and you can get my new memoir, Bookends, a memoir of love, loss, and literature, wherever books are sold starting July 1st, and my children's book, Princess Charming. You can learn more about me at zibbyowens.com, but really, you're here to learn more about the authors, and that is what we're going to do. Also, be sure to check out all the other podcasts in the Zcast Podcast Network. You can learn more at zcastnetwork.com and definitely check out those shows as well. Isaac Fitzgerald is the author of Dirtbag Massachusetts, A Confessional. Isaac is the New York Times bestselling author of Dirtbag Massachusetts. He appears frequently on The Today Show and is also the author of the bestselling children's book, How to Be a Pirate, as well as the co-author of Pen and Ink, Tattoos and Story and the Stories Behind Them. Also, Knives and Ink, Chefs and the Stories Behind Their Tattoos. His writing has appeared in the New York Times, The Atlantic, Esquire, The Guardian, The Best American Non-Required Reading, and numerous other publications. He lives in Brooklyn. Welcome, Isaac. Thank you so much for coming on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books to discuss Dirtbag, Massachusetts, A Confessional.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Okay, your book has gotten so much press. You must be so excited. It's like, tell me what that has been like, and then I want you to tell listeners more what it's about and all that. But first, just the preface.
Absolutely. Well, you know, for me, it has been a wild year, and I feel extremely grateful for that. Publishing, as we know, can be a real topsy-turvy world. And I've had different jobs in it for quite some time in the publishing industry. So I really tried to go in with low expectations. That's kind of a philosophy in all of life. I try to, you know, set the bar low, and then things go better than that. It's kind of exciting. And so with the launch of this book, you know, it really came down to, I was just thrilled for it to be out in the world and to find the right readers and the readers that could connect with it. But I never expected for that to be such a large number of readers, or for so many people to connect with this book in such a major way. And so the last 6 months, I've been on the road a lot. So it's been difficult. It's been hard. There's been, you know, it's something that I really love doing is traveling. But like once you're doing it for a long, long time, it starts to get a little road ragged, as I would say. But overall, it's just been like such a phenomenal experience. So while we come to the end of the year, I'm happy to take a little bit of a rest, but I'm really grateful for everything that happened.
Do you feel like the reception of it was different in Massachusetts?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, the book is kind of sneakily about California and a few other places. So like, I definitely got love from different parts of the country. I would say, if anything, this might get me in a little trouble, but the reaction, Massachusetts reaction and New England reaction was very in line with what I was expecting, which was a healthy bit of skepticism. Mm-hmm. But luckily, I'd like to think I won some readers over. But, you know, coming from New England, there's a little bit of a, like, let's keep it buttoned up. You know, we don't talk about that kind of stuff. But luckily, I found, especially for me, I would say like the largest supporting group were independent booksellers. And so the independent booksellers, not just in Massachusetts, but throughout New England, I was able to go to like a conference center that, or a conference that they had last year. And they just really turned up the support. And so I really, you know, and that stuff matters. It's like I said, it's such a topsy-turvy game. So like, you know, the fact that they were putting it in the windows and that they read it and really loved it is how I think it found its audience in that area.
That's awesome. I'm opening an indie bookstore.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
When, where?
In Santa Monica in February.
That's wonderful. Congratulations. And I'll have to come visit.
You'll have to come visit.
Yeah. Listen, I'm a big... I mean, obviously, it goes without saying, we all love independent bookstores, but right now, especially, it feels like there's this real turn into like, not only do they function as, you know, spaces for authors to come and interact with the community, but they actually are community centers themselves.
Yes. Yep.
And I think that's so important. And then the other part of it is, I think after, you know, many, many years of, oh, you know, this algorithm recommends this, or this is the best of list or this or that. Like, I really feel this year what I saw a lot of was people in local communities really trusting their independent booksellers, mm-hmm. the right book in the right hands. And so that's, if there's another one in Santa Monica, like a new independent bookstore, that makes me really happy. So
Thank you. And we're actually going to do shelves that are author curated. So it would be like your 5 or 10 favorite books or something like that.
That's such a great idea. And, you know, I'm sure you've got a lot of folks, but I would love
to. If you want to do one, we would love it.
That would make me so, so.
We're actually a little low on men.
I'm ready. Sign me up. Okay. It's right here. It's official.
Great. All right. Okay. Back to your book. So your whole memoir, why did you write it? Why did you want to share it? Which pieces of this were you like, I have to get this out. I want people to know X, Y, or Z.
Well, so the kind of funny story here is that for many, many years, I said I was never going to write about my childhood. I was very interested. I've always loved books. I grew up with a huge love of reading, and I really do have my parents to thank for that.
Yep.
And I knew that I, like, you know, writing was something. It took me a while. I'm not one of those folks that was like really gifted with it. I really, my approach to it was much more craft, work, 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 practice, 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 and over the years get better and better and better. But for the longest time in my 20s, especially, like I would meet you at a party We would talk. I was very open about my past. I would tell some stories. And every once in a while, somebody would say, oh, well, you should really. And I was always just kind of like, you know. So this book, when it sold, was actually supposed to be a bit more of just like pop culture commentary, a little like a sprinkling of my own stuff. But the book that I compare it to is, and the book that inspired it, and she's a good friend of mine, but Roxane Gay's Bad Feminist, like incredibly powerful essays, but like, you know, very separate, come from a lot of things that she'd written in the past, which I did as well in Dirtbag. But so that was my setup, was that kind of approach. And then as I sat down to write it, basically a year went by and I was really struggling. Let's be very clear about this. This book missed deadline many, many times. And so one of the problems was I would try to start writing about this idea that I had, and all of a sudden I'd have seven paragraphs about my father or seven paragraphs about something each other. And I kept trying to push that aside, push it aside, focus on the thing. And that's kind of when it started to dawn on me that maybe, and, you know, obviously not an original thought here, but it takes life to learn things. But maybe the things that I don't want to talk about, the things that I'm trying to kind of turn away from, that might actually be where the interesting stories are. So after, no lie, it was a year that I said, and then basically another 6 months passed, about 18 months, I called my editor at Bloomsbury, Nancy Miller, wonderful woman. And I said, I think this book might be a little bit more about my childhood than I expected it to be. And Nancy said, yeah, I've been waiting about 18 months for you to figure that out. And then that's when a lot of things really clicked into place for me. And, you know, the themes that came out of this book were not the themes that I was trying to get into when I started this project or when I sold the proposal. It really did have a lot more to do with community, family, faith than I expected it to at all. So it really, I wish I could sit here and tell you that I had this perfect idea and I knew exactly what I was trying to put out in the world and how to like figure out how to get readers to connect with these stories. But it really was a lot of fumbling in the dark. And then kind of, to be really, I mean, I'm sure many people can relate to this as well, but like, and then kind of almost overworking it and like not being willing to let it go because there was almost this fear of sharing these deeply personal stories in the world. But luckily I have a lot of people in my life who are really caring and really patient and who gave me some really great feedback and some really great help with edits and things like that. And eventually the book got to this place where I was willing to let it go.
I mean, I'm glad that you didn't say it was easy and you just like cranked it out and there it was in perfection. I mean, I think your experience is more reflective of the pain involved in writing a memoir and how hard it is to write the stuff that scares you.
No, it's something I'm so, so grateful for, because if I'd written this book when I was 25, one, my writing, it would have been a lot worse. But two, and I would argue much more importantly, it would be this book that's kind of like, my parents are the worst. Like the world is mean and hard. And like having written it 10 years later, I'm so grateful and thankful for the kind of introspection, kind of the maturity, you know, the growing up that I did in that time that allowed me to realize like, okay, my parents were having a difficult time. Yes, some of their choices were not fantastic. But now that I'm that same age, can I not see that not all adults have everything figured out? And it's sometimes we make very, very big mistakes, and that's okay. So I'm really happy that it, in a weird way, that it took me as long as it did to get down on the page.
I could feel some of that perspective too, when you were like, well, it made sense why we would leave the city. It should have been pretty and easy and a nicer life. Like they wouldn't have known that it would be so horrific. And maybe they could get over the fact that we were moving back to my mom's town where her mother like can stand her, whatever.
Like no, that's absolutely right. And just for those that are listening who are like, what is happening? What is this book even about? I can do it.
Yeah, there we go. Yes. I should have gone back.
No, that's all right. You asked it early and I kind of missed it. But it's Dirtbag Massachusetts. It's a collection of essays, but there really is through line, and I try to build kind of an overarching story. And one could almost call it episodic. You're moving through my life for the most part. Some scenes are kind of jumping around in time. And it starts very early on. But the kind of elevator pitch I can give is it's how my family kind of exploded apart And then in a very new shape, eventually over years and years and years, came back together. And a part of that explosion, a part of the beginning of that is we grew up in inner city Boston, involved with the Catholic Worker, which is kind of this, it's started by Dorothy Day. It's the socialist Catholic, very grassroots, you know, give your shirt to your neighbor type situation for the unhoused. And my family was unhoused. And so I grew up in the Catholic Worker in this kind of beautiful, vibrant, but on paper, you're like, oh, a kid's in a living situation for the unhoused. That's got to be really hard. Those were actually some of the best years of my life in the inner city. And then my parents make the decision to go out to rural Massachusetts. And like you were just saying, on paper, again, that should be like, oh, you're going to the country, you're going to have a yard. But actually, things became much, much worse. So the book goes from there, and kind of the reactions I have in my 20s, trying to pretend like my childhood is in the past and not affecting me at all, realizing that actually a lot of the trauma I experienced was making me make some very, very bad, or I don't even want to say bad, but sometimes difficult, sometimes hurtful to myself or to those around me, decisions. So that's the concept of Dirtbag Massachusetts. And you should know it's Dirtbag, Massachusetts, in name of this town that I lived in my teenage years. It was called Athol, Massachusetts. I'll give you one guess what everyone else in the state called Athol, Massachusetts. and it turns out you can't call a book that. So,
did you try?
Well, yeah. I mean, I talked about it with them, but I a real shout out here because I think it's important. They basically, and it's smart. You can, let's be honest. Technically, of course, you can, but it makes it hard to promote in any kind of way. It makes it really hard to search for. So they're like, hey, that's not a great idea. And Jason Diamond, who's a wonderful author and a very good friend of mine, I'm very lucky. I was kind of just offhandedly telling him that. He didn't miss a beat. He didn't just immediately just turn to me and was like, you should call it Dirtbag Massachusetts. And it was him. It was him. Like, it's a great title. And I just full shout out. It all came from Jason Diamond.
Amazing. I feel like you reached... There was such a turning point in your life before and after you went to boarding school. And it almost seemed very unlikely, given the narrative, that that's where you would end up for high school. And can you just talk a little bit about that? And like, what would have happened had you not gone? Do you ever think, was this like your sliding doors moment or?
Yeah, no, I think all of us as human beings have a million sliding door moments all the time. And if one thinks too much about it, you could do nothing but stare at the ceiling and wonder. But that was a big one for me, for sure. You're absolutely right. So after we move out to the country, things get really tough for my parents. And I also then grow a little older. And let's be honest, so around the age 12, I myself then become very difficult, kind of reacting to the years before and the experiences around me. And what was lucky is that I was at a school, public school, wonderful school, where the teachers, librarians, secretaries kind of saw, they could tell. They could tell that there was trouble at home, but they could also tell that if there was a situation where I was given a chance, I might be able to succeed academically. Because as much trouble as I was getting in school, I always made sure that my work was getting done, that my grades were up. And so I got a full scholarship to this boarding school. And it really, you know, before that I had no interest or interest isn't even the right word, like dream of going to college. And I felt like a very straight path. And I probably would have stuck around the area that I lived, where I want to be very clear. There's a really strong community there. It's a really beautiful part of the state. It is still a very low income part of the state, but we're talking about a low income part of a very rich state. So that's, you know, I talk about class and how kind of these poor communities and very wealthy communities really bump right up against each other in the book. And that's always going to be something that fascinates me. But I always want to give a shout out because that area is beautiful and does have such a strong community. But I think myself and what I was going through at the time, I would have been on a self-destructive path in that area. And what boarding school gave me was this chance to get out of my house and get away from a few of my bad habits. Now, let's be very clear. No matter where you go, there you are. So I still was getting into a ton of trouble. But I think the biggest gift that the boarding school gave me, not, you know, of course, education and this ability to then get a scholarship for college, but I was there for 4 years. And the biggest thing it did was just expand my horizons. I'd barely been out of the state at that point in my life. And here was a school where a lot of kids came from, not just all over the country, but internationally as well. And all of a sudden my world opened up in all of these incredible ways. It's funny because don't get me wrong. If you talk to me when I was probably 15, 16, there's a lot I would have complained about, but I really recognize what those teachers, secretaries, and librarians at my public school did for me in helping me achieve that. And then I understand what that school did in terms of broadening my horizons. And I think if I had stuck around a lot of my friends who did stick around have incredible stories themselves in whether they stay in the community and the way they help shape that community now, or in my best friend growing up ends up going to West Point. We're still best friends to this day. We've lived very, very different lives at this point. But you know, there are these wonderful stories out of that area. But I think myself, I was so drawn to this self-destructive path that I was on that I'd like to think I would have figured it out. I want to give myself that grace. I want to believe that I still could have figured things out, but I think it would have been a much harder journey.
Interesting.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. As kids get older, some things about parenting can get easier. I mean, not many, but some. But others don't, like having conversations about money. Point is, kids won't really know how to manage their money unless they're actually in charge of it, and that is where Greenlight can help. Greenlight is a debit card and money app made for families. Parents can send money to their kids and keep an eye on their kids' spending and saving, while kids and teens build money confidence and lifelong financial literacy skills. With the Greenlight app, kids can learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely, thanks to games that teach money skills in a fun and accessible way. I got Greenlight debit cards for my kids. The greatest thing, you can actually add their photos that take up half the card. So when I handed the cards to the kids, they were like, this is so exciting. So they look great. Unfortunately, I only put the required 2 cents on at the beginning to make sure they worked. So the kids were like, well, what should I spend my 2 cents on? Anyway, millions of parents and kids are learning about money on Greenlight. It's the easy, convenient way for parents to raise financially smart kids and families to navigate life together. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free when you go to greenlight.com/Zibby. That's greenlight.com/Zibby to try Greenlight for free. Greenlight.com/Zibby. You also wrote really openly about your body and your weight and the different fluctuations. And you even included a photo of like, oh, wow, look at what I looked like then. I can't even believe it, which was lovely. Thank you. and I just feel like we don't get enough of that. I mean, of the 1,000 books that a woman might discuss her body, there might be one. I feel like that's maybe the percentage, or I don't know, I made that up, but talk to me about sharing all that, what you feel about it, and what the response has been to your relationship with your own weight and body.
Well, so that essay that you're mentioning is probably one of the original. So like I said, a lot of this is new material, but some of it are pulled from these older essays that I published. Now, again, I reshaped them and made it so that it ran with a smoother narrative within the collection. But that, I believe, is probably the oldest essay in the book. And just speaking for myself, not speaking for any other readers, but what really sticks with me is how that essay is still as relevant to me today mm-hmm. as it was when I originally published it. And I think it's an essay that a lot of people connect with. It's probably one of the essays that I get written about the most from all sorts of different folks. And I think it's like one of the fundamental, sorry, my philosophy major kind of is jumping out here a little bit, but I think one of the fundamentals of the human experience is how do we feel at peace in our own bodies? How do we feel love for our own bodies, or like just not itchy in our own skin, to try and find peace? And then the tough thing that I mentioned in the essay is you will have these moments of like, oh, this is it. I look good. I feel good. I love myself. And then a day, 2 days later, all of a sudden it can all, and you're just like, oh, and it can all come apart. And I try to capture that in this essay. But for me, when I first published that essay, I remember being a bit scared again, putting it out into the world. But I knew that I basically had a theory from talking to so many people at that point in my life. I was at least probably 30. And I was starting to figure out, wait a second, I'm not the only person. And actually, it's not even small. Like, I think my theory is it might just be almost everyone that grapples with this. And when I put it out into the world, the feedback I got really, really showed that to be true. So that is why body image issues, I think, are going to be something that I'm always trying to write about. And I do, you know, just to speak on it, I think it's something that men should feel. And I think we're seeing way more of it now, way more of it. But a lot of acceptance in themselves to feel okay sharing these different kinds of thoughts. Because you just the more people are talking about it, the less alone other people will feel with it. And I think for a long time there was this feeling of, hey, we don't talk about that kind of stuff. Like, just either hit the gym or don't, but like, don't talk about it. So I just really, I'm excited, I think, as I get older as a reader, that I'm seeing more and more of it out there in the world.
The first essay I ever published, I was 14, and I wrote about what it had felt like to gain 20 pounds, like the year my parents got divorced. And I wrote it in 17 magazine, you know, not exactly your caliber of place to publish.
But, you know. And you were 14. I don't look at that. That doesn't, hang on a second. The math is a math, but no, that's amazing. Keep going.
No, but like you, like, I got so many letters to the magazine. I feel like that's the only reason why I've like kept writing for however many years, I'm 46. So the people are so desperate, I feel, to feel seen. Desperate sounds negative. Eager. People are just so eager because of all the interior conversations, just to feel like, oh gosh, thank God someone said something that I feel and don't say. So,
and again, I think it helps you move through the world in a more loving manner mm-hmm. because all of a sudden you recognize that, okay, yeah, you've got these rough voices in your head, but then you wait, it's kind of, so does everybody else, and mm-hmm. everyone's kind of dealing with this. I love that. Can I ask, did you just submit it to, sorry, now I promise not to turn the
no no it's okay
did you just submit it to them? Did you have somebody, you knew somebody there? Like,
I did not know anybody there. I actually my mother is on the nosier side of things. Anyway, I wrote it. I used to write all the time. And so I wrote it, da, 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 and I printed it to go grab, but my mother somehow intercepted it off the couch and read it before I could, you know, not in front of me, and then came into my room holding it and was like, oh, you know, you have to send this to a magazine. I bet this will help other girls. And I was like, what? Why would I do that? I didn't even want you to read it. And she's like, no, I really think it can help people. So we sat there and opened it up and found the address and like mailed it in. And then they took it. I know, it was so amazing. I couldn't believe it. Then they had me go to the office. I had to like pose with a scale. They like waxed my eyebrows off. I was like, this is terrible. Like, what are we doing here?
They were doing that a lot back then.
Yeah. Anyway, it was pretty exciting.
Yeah, no, again, I'm sure there's all sorts of different levels to that story and to your mom and that relationship as well. What a brave thing to do and at such a young age. And then also to get that feedback. Not just, you know, not just like this kind of thin, like, oh yeah, you did a good job, but to actually have readers write letters that were meaningful and that you felt that kind of connection. So it's no wonder you then are writing the rest of your life, having this love of that kind of connection, because that's a really real thing. That's impressive.
Well, I think like you, I think that it can't be underestimated the power of someone early on, like identifying something in you that they see of value, yeah. Whether it's you're smart enough, you should be like, why don't you try going to this school? Or you know what? You're good at that. Or keep writing or keep doing this. Like it's huge. So many people on the podcast are like, I had this one teacher who really believed in me. And that's like all it was. It changed their lives.
The power of somebody believing, and this is just something I believe in completely, but the power of somebody believing in you, or the power of even just positive support. Mm-hmm. I mean, even if it's coming in the form of like, hey, there's something that you might need to work on here, but said in this kind of positive way, is something that I really, really believe in, because I think especially when you're young, I think there's so much like pressure to figure out the world. That's what we're all, right? Even since we're little babies, it's just a little learning machine that we have in our, and we're just trying to wrap our head around the world. And then again, the world gets bigger and bigger and you learn that all the problems are much more complex, but you're always kind of constantly trying to figure that out. And so especially when you're young, I think there's this want to be like, okay, I've got it. I've got my handle on it. This is the way the world is. Okay. And that can feel comforting in certain ways, but in other ways, it means you're almost against changing.
Mm-hmm.
You're just like, hey, I want to stay, right? And that's the beauty of when somebody comes into your life and says, hey, just for the record, this is all going to be changing all the time, but it's okay. Like you're going to do a good job with X, Y, and Z. Like it's okay to grow and change in these ways. And that kind of support can really change the trajectory of somebody's life.
Totally. Totally agree. By the way, I loved your children's book, which I read with my kids. How did you end up doing that? Like that came first. Like how did that happen?
This is great. This is a great, great story. I could tell it for like an hour. I'm going to give you the quick
version. You have 3 minutes.
I promise. All right. So the book's called How to Be a Pirate. It's illustrated by Bridget Berger, who's this incredible illustrator out there on the West Coast. And she also did Uni the Unicorn, which is every time I'm doing like a reading in the school and I say that, all the kids go, oh, because it's such an incredible book. She's such a great illustrator. But the way that book comes to be, much like we're kind of talking about here, a lot of my process is an idea just kicking around in my head forever and ever and ever. A lot of these essays, even when I was saying I don't want to write it, like these thoughts and these memories were still kicking around in my head. So How to Be a Pirate came from this place of I wanted to make a tattoo book for kids. That was it. That was the idea. And it hadn't really baked much more than that, but it had been kicking around for me in my head for years. I had a friend who had a kid who their kid called me the stamped man. Like my brother was starting to have kids and like, they were like, what are these? So I just wanted to figure that out. Anyways, much kind of to the themes that we're talking about, community, a little bit of luck, but a lot of positive support. I moved to New York City from San Francisco. Rough move. Kind of had forgotten about winter. Big mistake. Everything was kind of hard in that moment. But then, you know, get through the winter. Next summer, I'm out in my backyard. And this is truly, I'm not talking down the block. I'm talking about two backyards. Like, there's just a guy in his backyard drinking rosé. And then I'm in the next lot in my backyard drinking rosé. We get to talking. We talk and talk and talk. Eventually he's like, hey, why don't you just come around the block, come to the house. I walk in the house, there's kids' books everywhere. Here's the thing. The guy's name was John Sheska. It's John Sheska. He wrote The Stinky Cheese Man and other fairly rotten fairy other fairly stupid tales. You know, The True Story of the Big Bad. Like these incredible, like these 90s books that shaped my head. Thing is, if you look at his name, the way it's, I just didn't know how it was ever pronounced as a kid. It's just, there's a lot of like S's, Z's and C's in there. And so like, I didn't know until I got, all of a sudden I was like, holy crap. So we become friends. I've got this idea for a kid's book, but the one thing I don't want to do is step on his toe. Mm-hmm. You meet somebody, you don't, John Sheska, everybody that meets him probably is like, I have a kid's book idea. So I waited like 30 times. I waited 30. And then I said it kind of what I just said to you. And then he just looks me dead in the eyes and he just says, Isaac. And I go, yeah. He goes, that's a stupid idea for a kid's book. And I'm crushed. Just like, I'm like, oh no, I overstepped my boundaries. Ah. And then what he says, but if you come over here every other Friday for the rest of the summer, I will teach you how to take this like weird idea that you have that's very much an adult trying to teach a kid something, which kids don't want, idea for a kid's book, and turn it into a book that a child might actually be interested to read. And so I won't take you through everything that he taught me in that moment. That can be a story for next time. That support and that love and that trust. And the first time I walked over there, all those kids' books I'd mentioned in his library were out there on couches, on the floor, on coffee tables. And he's like, I'm going to go to the backyard and drink some rosé, and you're going to read all these books. It was like this very karate kid style thing that happened. But he really taught me how to write a children's book. And the reason that book is so good and the reason kids like it is because of the incredible way that John Sheska thinks about young readers.
Wow.
So,
well, back to somebody encouraging.
I won't lie. Very proud of Dirtbag, Massachusetts, but How to Be a Pirate, the way it connects with kids is like so much to me.
I couldn't believe when I realized you were the same person. I was like, no way. Anyway.
That makes me very happy too.
Anyway. Well, Isaac, thank you so much for coming on. This is really fun. It was great getting to know you. So thank you.
It's going to be an absolute pleasure. Talk to me about Santa Monica, the bookstore idea.
Yes, I will.
Here to help. And then hopefully next time I'm out there, we can see each other in person.
Sounds good. All right.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to this episode of Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens and at Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Also sign up for my newsletter at ZibbyOwens.com and sign up for my virtual book club and meet lots of authors on Zoom every other week. Thanks so much to Steve and Ryan at Texture Sound for the sound editing. And thank you to Morning Moon Productions for providing this fantastic intro and outro music.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.